Beginning a new sefer now, beginning Chumash Bamidbar and Parshas Bamidbar. And if you read quickly through the first two prakim, it seems to be a lot of what we would think are insignificant details. The first parak deals with taking a census of Bnei Yisrael, counting up the number of people in Bnei Yisrael. And then the second parak we move to a description of how those people should then be encamped, how they should surround the Mishkan, who should camp together, and again, retallying how many people there are. And Sefer Bamidbar, it's called the Book of Numbers in English, and on the last time I checked, the Midbar was a desert, it wasn't Numbers. But the name, of, at least in English, seems to come from the way Chazal referred to Sefer Bamidbar, which is Chumash HaPekudim, which is the Sefer of Numbers, the Sefer, I guess, more literally of counting. So it certainly seems that these first two prakim, which begin the Sefer, are in fact more fundamental. If the Chazal are going to refer to the entire Sefer as Chumash HaPekudim, because, again, it could be that it just happens to be begins with that, so we choose that as a name, but usually Chazal refer to something more by its essence, and by something that the Sefer really represents. So what is it about these beginning prakim, the Pekudim, the census that's taken, the Zegalim, the banner is the way that the Bnei Yisrael are encamped afterwards, that's so fundamental that it merits having the entire book called after it. So Rav Hirsch and others explain that from the juxtaposition of these two prakim, from the fact that first we discuss the census and then we move to the encampments of the people, and again retallying, it seems to be that the purpose of the count was in fact the Gullim, was in fact to set up the encampments which followed. So basically, Perek Beis is a culmination of what we were trying to accomplish through the census in Perek Aleph. So what I'd like to try to do is focus more on Perek Beis, more on trying to understand the Gullim, the encampments of Klal Yisrael. And first, to try and understand the basic details of the Gullim, and later we'll try to use the Midrashim to understand a little bit more deeply what the Gullim are teaching us, and perhaps why the Sefer is called Chumash HaPekudim, why there's such an essential lesson in the census which then led to this list of the Gullim. So the Mishkan was in the center of the camp of Klal Yisrael. And on each of the sides, the four sides of the Mishkan, sat or camped three Shvatim. On the eastern side was Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zevulun. On the southern side was Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. And the western side was Binyamin, Ephraim, and Menashe. And on the northern side was Naphtali, Dan, and Asher. Okay. In and of it, to itself doesn't seem so important, and they're referred to as the Degalim. And the Degel, we know a Degel as being a flag, it's a banner. And Rashi explains, quoting from the other Mefarshim, that each Degel, each Shevet had their own flag, and each their flag was the color of their stone on the Choshen, and it also had some sort of insignia representing something about what the essence of that Shevet was about. And then each of these three groups together, each of these three Shvatim, that encompassed one group of the four groups, again, that encamped on each side, had another flag which included all of the other colors and all the other insignias and all the other messages that were on the individual flags of each of the Shvatim. Now, why were they set up this way? Why is it so significant to talk about the fact that they were set up in such a fashion? So the Abarbanel notices the numbers. When you add up the numbers, the eastern side, which is the one where Yehuda was, which is the one that traveled first, the total number of people there was 186,400, which we'll see was by far the largest group. To the south, there was 151,450 people. To the north, 157,600. So the north and the south were very close in terms of the number of people, both within basically 5,000 people of each other. And then in the western side, opposite where Yehuda was 108,100. So between the east and the west, there was a discrepancy of about 78,000 people. So the largest group was in the east, which is the first group that traveled. The south was the second group that traveled, which was Reuven, the back, which had about 150,000. The back had about 108,000, and the north had, again, about 150,000. And he explains, if Rav Nelson, that the simple pshat is that it was it's a military strategy. That when you're attacking your enemies, you want to have the front being the strongest. You want to come out with all of your numbers in the front. So it was designed that the Shvatim, which would end up being a larger number, which would equal this 186,000, were in the front. They were the first ones that people would see when they would come to attack. The second place where enemies are likely to attack are from the sides, and that's why on each of the sides there was almost an equivalent number of people, again approximately 150,000, and then as every army does in the back, you have the weaker group, the smaller group of approximately 108,000 people. And that's just simply put, the golem made order in the camp. It made everybody knew where they were supposed to be. And from a military perspective, it made sense to encamp them in such a way. And that's why, if you look, not all the order, you know, on the south, you have Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. And so Levi wasn't part of the encampment, so you wouldn't think that Levi would be there, but Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. You would have thought that Yehuda should be together with Reuven and Shimon. So perhaps some of the reasons for why the Shvatim were divided up the way they are, not necessarily simply according to chronological order, was in order to create this structure where militarily they had a very solid camp. Others explained that it was also for military purposes, but not just the mere numbers, but just the structure itself. Having order, having the camps being so orderly, I guess the same way you see in communist countries where they have these large parades of military and everything is in exact perfect order. And they try to show through that how strong their military is, just by the order by which they're marching, the fact that everybody's so in sync, that has a certain intimidation factor to it. So too, Klal Yisrael, when they were encamped, they had a certain just structure to it, and that structure just was a way of expressing to their enemies that there is an order, there's a method, and that if need be, they can act together as a cohesive unit. And the Kli Yakar says that it had to do with the traits that a Jew needs to possess, and that there are four attributes which a person needs to have, and a person needs to balance in order for their Shekhinah to come down, and that's why these four were surrounding the Mishkan. The four attributes a person needs to have and also know what to do with is to be wise, rich, strong, and modest. So the eastern group, which was the group which came out first, which was the group of Yehuda, so that represented the power of Torah, and that dedication to Torah was ultimately what was going to determine whether they were going to lose or whether they were going to be victorious in battle. When Klal Yisrael go out to war, it's their commitment to Torah that ultimately is going to define whether they're victorious or not. The second group on the south represented Midos Tovos, and that was the idea of being humble. In the west, which was the back from this perspective, was the idea of strength, and it was put in the west to show that just as the sun sets in the west, so too, as a person gets older, their strength begins to wane. And finally, in the north, which was the group that traveled last, because it's the least important, that was the group that represented the material possessions, which, if one knows what to do with, are appropriate, but it presents a battle in terms of figuring out how to appropriate one's funds and to use it as part of one's Avodas Hashem. Those are just at least some more simple understandings of how the machna was structured. There is. I just didn't want to, for time purposes, I just wasn't going. The Kli Yakar explains why each of those Shvatim and then the three of them together represent that cohesive unit.
And why they are together, why those
are... Right, each of those three have that common denominator. That's what the Kli Yakar elaborates on.
Was it Zvulun supporting Yisachar, or was it flip side?
Correct, it was Zvulun and...
Is that why they were kept together?
That is why they were kept together, and there is... It's interesting that they were together, but there's no vav connecting Zvulun to the rest of them to show that there is some sort of difference between them, but that's perhaps for a different time. What I'd like to try to do now which is try to look at some of the Midrashim and the Ma'amare Chazal discussing the Golem, and from there try and understand a little bit more the significance and what the real lesson that we can glean from the Golem is, or maybe multiple lessons and what those lessons are, and from that hopefully try to understand why the Chumash HaPekudim was named for such, what the fundamental lessons of the taking the census leading to the Degolim was. So the Medrash Rabbah in one place says, Hashem says to Bnei Yisrael, Ad Heichan Chibibon, Ad Heichan Shomron, Ad Heichan Notron, how much do I protect them? How much do I love Bnei Yisrael? Kivyachal Ad Ki Ishon Eino. And then Kadosh Baruch Hu says, let me show you how much I love them. Sh'amar ha'alokim l'moshe, Moshe, emor lohem sh'yasu mishkan b'neihem. The first thing Hashem says is, Moshe, I'm going to tell you to create a mishkan so that I can come down. I'm going to do a kivyocha, ani meniach et ha'alyonim. It's as if Hashem says, I'm leaving the alyonim, I'm leaving the above, yorei v'shochan b'neihem, and actually coming down to settle amongst them. And that's one expression of Hashem's love for Klal Yisrael. V'lo ot ela sh'asa osam zigalim l'shmo. And not just that, but I even made the Golem, I made these banners to honor them. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, Aseh Osam Zegolim L'Shmi, make banners for them for my name. Lama Shehem Banai, why? Because they are my children, Shenemar Banim Atem L'Hashem Elokechem. Fem Tzivosai, they're my hosts, they're my legions. V'cheinu Omer, etc. Dego machna Yehuda tzivosam lufishin tzivosa yasa eose osam zigalim lishmi ahudichsev ish al ziglo. So Hashem says, why am I giving them zigalim? It's an expression of my love for them, and it's an expression of the fact that they are my children. How? What manifestation? We understand the fact that there's a mishkan in Bnei Yisrael. Hashem says, I'm going to dwell amongst them. I'm going to, as it says, kiviyaka, leave the elyonim, leave the abodes above and come down and be together with Klal Yisrael. So you understand how that's an expression of Hashem's love for Klal Yisrael. But okay, so they make a degel. Who cares? What's the significance? What's the significance of this degel? That's the first measure. So this measure seems to indicate that the degelim were an expression of Hashem's love for us because we are His children. The next measure in the Medrash Rabbah says that after Bnei Yisrael were given these begolim and they were set up in such a way, the Goyim and the surrounding nations saw Bnei Yisrael like this, and they said, and they saw how you saw with the glam, chol omos mistaklim benu tmeyin ve'omim, mizos ha'nishkafa kemo shachar ayuma kanitgolos, who made this nation in such beautiful encampments. Omer lehem umos, shuvi shu yashulamis, hidab kulanu, bo etzlenu vano, osin oschem shotonim, hegmonim duchsim. The nations of the world saw Bnei Yisrael in their Degolim, in their encampments, and said, come, join us. We'll make you into our leaders. We'll make you into the generals over us. And what did Bnei Yisrael say to them? What can you possibly do for us? What does it do for us to be leaders over you? Could you possibly do for us anything greater than what Hashem has done for us in the Midbar? Dega machana Yehuda, Dega machana Reuven, Dega machana Dan, Dega machana Ephraim, Mechol matem lasos lono. Could you possibly do the Degolim the same way Hashem has done for us? So again, here was the Degolim, not only is it something which is very special and beloved to Klal Yisrael, but the Goyim are jealous of it. What's there to be jealous of? What's so significant about these Degolim that the Goyim, not only are they jealous of what they still have, but they're so inspired or maybe intimidated by what they see, that they're asking the Jews to join them and to be their leaders, to come together with them, to leave their lot as being Klal Yisrael and to come and join them. Why? What is it that's so significant about these Degolim that inspired the Goyim to think that they wanted this as well?
But
that's a good point. That's a fair point. No, it makes sense. I'm not sure why, but again, the simple reading of the measure seems to be that maybe they thought they didn't realize there was any way for them to get into that, meaning if they become part of the Jews in terms of their what shape they would be part of, they wouldn't have the same lot. I'm not 100% sure, but clearly what you do see from the Medrash is that not only was it something that was special and that was unique to Klal Yisrael, but it was something that everybody else wanted to be a part of. So again, so the first Medrash explained that it was an expression of Hashem's love for us. Again, to see how that is, what love is Hashem showing us and making us as the Golem. And apparently the Goyim at least understood what that was all about, and that there was some sort of expression of love or something else. There was something about these Degalim that they wanted to be a part of as well. Medrash number 3. The Medrash says that at the time of Matan Torah, Keman Sheniglo HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Har Sinai, when Hashem came down to Har Sinai, Yardu Imo Chof Beis Elef Markevos Malachim, 22,000 chariots of Malachim came down. V'hayu asuyim, and when these chariots of Malachim came down, they were in the Golem. They were in these banners. They were in some sort of form. The Kachnamar Dogo Merivava. Kevan Shiro Asan Yisolim. And Yisrael saw the Malachim coming down with Hashem in these Golem, in this formation. Shehayu asuyim degalim degalim. His skilum is avu degalim. Bnei Yisrael wanted also; they desired also being put into the golem. They wanted what the malachim had. The malachim came down with Hashem in this formation, this encampment, and they wanted it as well. Amru halavai shanu nasim degalim kemosan. Halavai, we should get this also. We should also have the zechus of being put into the golem. And then Hashem says, "Amar lahem Hakadosh Baruch Hu nisavisam l'zigalim." You really, Hashem says to Bnei Yisrael, you really want to be put into the golem so badly? Chayechem shani yoseh shilasem. I'll do what you ask for. Shnemar yimali Hashem kol mishal sechem miyad hodi Hakadosh Baruch Hu tahavasol Yisrael. Hashem expressed His love for Bnei Yisrael. V'amar leMoshe leich aseh osam zigalim kemoshe nisavo. And Hashem told Moshe, "Go make for them the golem. Go make these encampments just as they want." So here also, again, the fact that the golem were something very, very special is clear. Bnei Yisrael wanted it so badly. But again, the question is why? What was so special? What was it that Bnei Yisrael were almost jealous of, that they desired it when they saw that the Malachim have it? And then why did the Malachim have to have it also? What does it mean that the Malachim came down in the golem? Two more Mamari Chazal, and then hopefully we'll try and zero in on what the point of all these Midrashim is. Later on in Sefer Bamidbar, so Balak hires Bilam to go curse Bnei Yisrael. And Bilam looks out on the encampments of Bnei Yisrael, and it says that he saw Yisrael Shochein Lishvatav, that they were encamped, and he said, "I'm unable to curse them." Why? What was it that was so powerful about seeing the way Bnei Yisrael were encamped that made it unable for Bilam to be able to curse Bnei Yisrael? And then finally, there's a halacha which also seems to be based on the Degalim. The Gemara in Zvachim and Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis is talking about when there's no Beis Hamikdash, there are different boundaries from which you can eat the different korbanos. And the halakha was that kodshei kodshim, the highest form of kedusha, the korbanos that were considered to be kodshei kodshim, the ola, the chatos, etc., those korbanos could only be eaten in the mishkan itself, and within the courtyard of the mishkan. The other korbanos that were kodshim kalim, shlamim, and korbanos like that were allowed to be eaten within machane Yisrael, within the encampments of Bnei Yisrael. Says the Gemara, once Bnei Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, Kachim Kalam Mechal Makam. Kachim Kalam could be eaten everywhere, not just within the encampments, but even beyond the camp as well. Rashi explains why is that. The Kevan Shebitlu Hazagolim, once they came into Eretz Yisrael, and they hadn't yet settled the land, they hadn't had kibbutz, they hadn't divided the land, Bitlu Hazagolim, they didn't have these Zagolim, they didn't have these special encampments, they didn't have an order to which they were settling down. They were traveling the entire land to try and capture the land. And they weren't encamped surrounding the Mishkan. The Kedusha that was unique to Machane Yisrael no longer existed. And that's why it wasn't limited by Machane Yisrael. So you'll say, but now the border for Kachim Kalam is larger. But apparently that was a deficiency. It was that Kachim Kalam, the halacha is that they can be eaten beyond the Mishkan. And beyond the Mishkan, other than all of Eretz Yisrael, there was no source of Kedusha stemming uniquely from Machane Yisrael. So here, somehow, the Degolim, the fact that there were no Degolim, actually affected the halacha where you feed Kachim Kalam. There was no Kedusha in the Machane Yisrael. So what is it about these Degolim that affects the Kedusha of Machane Yisrael? So just to summarize the different Midrashim and the problems that they possess before we try and answer them, because again, one Midrash said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he loves Bnei Yisrael, because Bnei Yisrael are his children, he says, I'm going to make for them Degolim. So how is that an expression of love for Bnei Yisrael? How is that an expression of Hashem's love for us? The second Midrash said that the Goyim saw that Bnei Yisrael had these Degolim, and they said, come join us. Something about it, they were jealous. They wanted it too. So what is it that's so special about the Degolim that Bnei Yisrael wanted to keep it so badly, and that the Goyim wanted also to have it? The third Medrash was the one that expressed that at the time of Matan Torah, Hashem Kiviyachal came down with 22,000 Malachim, and they were coming down in these encampments, in these Degolim, and Bnei Yisrael saw that the Malachim were like this, and they desired it, and Hashem ultimately gave the Degolim of our Parsha because Bnei Yisrael wanted it. He said, Moshe, see, the Bnei Yisrael wanted, give it to them. Established for them the gum. So what was it they wanted so badly, and why was it that the Malachim came down in such a form? What does it mean that the Malachim came down in the Golem? And then why is it that it affected Bilam's ability to curse Bnei Yisrael? And why is it that it affects ultimately in Halacha as well, affects the Kedusha of Machane Yisrael? So I think the answer begins with the middle Medrash, the Medrash about Matan Torah. What does it mean that the Malachim were in the Golem, and why did the Jews desire it? That was our question. They came down in the Golem. Why was that so important? So what unique quality does the Malach possess? We know that the Torah says in Parshas Vayera that three Malachim came to Avraham Avinu. And three Malachim were sent because they each had a unique mission. They're being sent for three separate tasks, so three Malachim were sent. And the question that everybody asks is why three had to be sent for three missions? Why couldn't one Malach have been sent and that one Malach would perform all three tasks? And what Chazal teach us is that each Malach is only able to do one task. How come each Malach is only able to do one task? Because the task that a Malach has becomes the essence of that Malach. The purpose of the Malach, the existence, whatever exactly that means, of a malach, but the essence of the malach is what they need to do. Rafael is the malach of Rafua. That's the essence of Rafael, and that's all he's able to do because that's his tafka, that's his purpose. And it's definitional to who he is. And perhaps that's what the Medrash means, that the malachim came down as the golem. That, again, the golem, what was the idea of the golem? The golem were a unique expression of each Shevet. Each Shevet had its own degel, its own flag, its own banner, representing its own unique kochos, its own unique talents, and its own unique attributes. And when the Malachim came down in the Golem, what it meant is that the way Malachim come down was when Malachim come down, they have a purpose. And that purpose is the degel. What the degel is the fact that the Malachim come down knowing what their mission is. When the 22,000 Malachim came down, accompanied on Kadosh Baruch Hu to Matan Torah, each one had its own unique purpose and knew what that purpose, was. And that's what Bnei Yisrael were desiring. Bnei Yisrael were desiring. They wanted to know what their purpose, what their role in life is. The same way it's clear to the Malach, and what the mission of the Malach is becomes who they are. Bnei Yisrael wanted that also. Bnei Yisrael wanted guidance. Bnei Yisrael wanted to know where they were going. They wanted to have that clear path in order to allow them to fulfill whatever their mission is in life. And I think with this we can understand all of those Ma'amari Chazal and also appreciate the unique message of the Degalim. Hashem says that the reason that He's going to make for us the Degalim is as an expression of our unique relationship with Him as being Banim Lamakom, being children of Hashem. That guidance that Hashem gives us, the fact that Hashem is willing to provide us with a path with a knowledge of what our purpose is certainly a tremendous gift that Hashem has given to us. The same way a parent tries to help a child realize his or her own personal potential, to realize what the unique character traits of a child is, and to help them bring those character traits out and use that as a driving force to accomplish everything they need to accomplish in life. That's what the Degalim are all about. Hashem, because Hashem has this relationship with us, wants to guide us and wants to give us the ability to find our kochos and to bring those kochos forward and to use them in our avodas Hashem. So I think it's going to be true on the level of a shevet and then as individuals as well. Again, I think it is clear that each shevet has certain character traits, and then I think that it moves down as well. There are certain families, and families have certain character traits to them. I never had a.
But you're saying that within each shevet, even individuals have all similar traits to each other.
Again, how similar is similar? Again, a certain basic outlook. Yeah, I think that's what the Golem. What the Gemara is saying, and then it moves down, and it might become more individualized as you move down the generations, or to smaller groups. You start out with the shevet as a whole, and then you move to a family, and then individuals also. But in terms of certain basic attributes, the Gemara were established as they were, and perhaps is what will hopefully develop as we go on. The idea that the Gemara might have been to help guide us, but certainly there is going to be work on the individual to try and figure out how each person's own unique attributes fit into that path of Avodas Hashem.
Okay, I may have, I was concentrating, and then I saw a bird, and so I lost temporarily my...
No problem.
I came here, all right? I was up there, all right?
Hashem comes down here. It's also good for us to go up there.
There were 22,000 Malachim, right? And Am Yisrael wanted the Degalim similar to what?
Since what those Malachim apparently represented.
So when they came down,
who?
The Malachim. Okay. Did they go to the various Shevatim? Did they divide themselves?
I don't think so. I don't know that.
Or were they?
I think they came down with their specific mission. Bnei Yisrael saw that they came down with a mission, and that when Malachim come down, they have a certain purpose, and they desired to have that knowledge, to be able to live their lives in such a way that they would have a purpose as well. The same way that the Malachim came down as the Golem, and what I'm suggesting is that the Golem represents this idea that you have a focus. On what your mission is and what you're trying to accomplish. The same way a Malach, the essence of the Malach is accomplishing that mission. That's all the Malach is capable of. The Malach can't even have two missions. So too, Bnei Yisrael desired that ability to be given a focus in their Avodas Hashem. The number of Malachim don't directly correspond to anything with the Golem. As a response to that, Hashem later gave Bnei Yisrael their own Degalim. I'll try to elaborate on this more. Feel free to disagree. Now, this is at least what I thought. And I think if we have this perspective, so first of all, we understand, or just to get back to the point before, I think it's going to be true on a broader level when it comes to the Shevet as a whole, and then become individualized as well. I remember having a psychology professor who used to say that when you're trying to figure out that there's a child and family that's having certain trouble within fitting into the framework of the family, so the most important thing to try and figure out is what's the bumper sticker of that family. That every family has a certain bumper sticker. Said whether it's, and he used to be teaching in YU, is it YU or bust? Is it yeshivish or bust? Is it midos tovos? There's something which is the most important thing to every family. And if you can pinpoint that a child is having, because of perhaps who that child is having trouble fitting into that bumper sticker, then sometimes that already helps alleviate the problem. And then you just have to try to work to broaden the bumper sticker or to change the bumper sticker or to try to do something to let the child fit in. So that's the idea. I think there are certain character traits that larger groups can represent. It doesn't mean that every single person is going to exhibit those traits in the exact same way. With that perspective, then I think we can begin to understand the jealousy of the Goyim as well. When the Goyim saw that Bnei Yisrael were in these Degalim, or Bnei Yisrael were given this gift of being attuned to the unique attributes that they have, then they also, that was something that they desired as well. And then perhaps that answers your question as well. They didn't need to become part of Klal Yisrael. They wanted to see how that's done. They said, come to us, come lead us, show us how to reach our potential. We don't want to become part of the Jewish people, but that gift, that ability to be able to be sensitive to what our role is in life, what we're trying to accomplish, that sense of purposefulness, they were jealous of that as well. Why is the Kedusha of the Machane Yisrael dependent on these encampments? So why is Bilam unable to curse Bnei Yisrael? So the Torah says, Vayisa Bilam eseinav vayaris Yisrael shochein lishvatov. And Bilam raised up his eyes and he saw that Bnei Yisrael were dwelling according to their tribes. So on one level, perhaps it could have just been what the Goyim saw also, that Bnei Yisrael were literally, they had these encampments, and something about the Zegolim themselves, the fact that they were encamped in this unique way surrounding the Mishkan, that already was enough to shut Bilam down, and he was unable to proceed. However, that's not what Rashi says. Or seemingly that's not what Rashi says. What Rashi says, Ra'a kol shevet v'shevet shochein la'atzmo ve'inanu raven. He saw each and every shevet dwelling by themselves, they were not mixed together. So that the doorways of the homes were not, you could not see from one to the other. They weren't lined up next to each other. That nobody could peer into anybody else's home. So there was a certain level of tzniyus. They were trying to remain separate. And I think that, in truth, these two points are very closely related and intertwined. The arrangement of their individual tents within the camp in a way that nobody could peer into anybody else's tent was a manifestation and a realization of Bnei Yisrael and this entire parsha of the Degalim. They realized that each person has their own abilities, each person has their own unique talents, and each person has their contribution. Every person is given the set of cards that they need to achieve whatever it is. There's no reason to look into anybody else's tent. There's no reason to look beyond one's own tent to try and accomplish what one was put here for. There's no reason to need to see into anybody else's tent. There's no reason to look beyond what you're given, because that's, again, what this message of the Degalim was. The message of the Degalim was that each and every person is given this ability to hone in to their own unique talents and to try and use those to serve Hashem. And that's really what Kedusha is. It's not just following the instruction of the encampments and just doing the setting up the structure of the camp the way it was, but internalizing and utilizing this lesson. They established their physical camps within those encampments. They weren't told how to set up their doorways so they couldn't see into one another's. But they realized, because they were sensitive to what Hashem was telling them with the general structure of the Degalim, that everybody has their own unique role, everybody has that which they are given, that there was no reason and there's no desire to look into anybody else's tent. And perhaps this idea is so strong that it influences that halacha as well. That the ultimately the kedusha of Machane Yisrael, even in terms of achilas kodshim, where you can eat the karbanos, is affected by where Bnei Yisrael manifests the kedusha. Kedusha is something which has to come from within, from the way the people are living their lives within the Machane Yisrael. It's not something which can just be dictated from without in terms of certain boundaries, but it's actually something which comes from within the Machane Yisrael and how the people within the Machane lead their lives. So what's Hashem telling us with these Degolim? How do they help us achieve our purpose in life? So I think the first lesson of all the Degolim is that all of the Machanos surrounded and were equidistant from the Mishkan and from the Aron, from the Torah that was inside the Mishkan. And that in Avodas Hashem, the first message of the Machanos is that the central point is the Torah, and that everything else that happens has to be viewed within the perspective of the Torah. Whatever one is doing and whatever one's personal strengths are, ultimately every person knows that that has to be viewed through the same lens. It's the lens of the Torah which stands in the middle of all four machanas, that every shevet is equidistant from the Mishkan. Ultimately, that reins us in, and that makes sure that whichever approach each individual has, whichever approach each shevet has, each family has, and each person has, ultimately that has to be looked at through the perspective of the Torah. And what that leads to, I think, is a more fundamental lesson, which is what there are different paths to reach the same goal. There are different paths that ultimately come to the same goal of Avodas Hashem. And the Shvatim each had a different character traits, they each had different strengths, and that allowed them to express their Avodas Hashem and allowed them to approach Hashem from a different angle, from a different perspective. And it's true on the level of a community, and it's true on the level of an individual, as we mentioned before. And within Klal Yisrael, there are larger groups as well. Again, do they all express the exact same character traits? No. But you have Hasidim, and you have Misnagdim, and there are Bnei Ashkenaz, and Bnei Sfard, and there is a certain common denominator between the people of those larger groups. Is every single person the same? Obviously not. Does everybody have their own unique characteristics within that group? Yes. But there is a certain amount of commonality between all of those people. And as long as ultimately everybody is reaching for the same goal, the Torah which is in the middle, the lesson of the Degolim is that all of these are different ways of reaching the same point. The Imsukei de Zimra, so in Nusach Ashkenaz, they say Baruch She'amar, and then it's followed by Hodu and the other Prakim of Tehillim. In Nusach Sfard, first they say Hodu, and then afterwards they say Baruch She'amar. I think it was Rav Meir Melublin who once said, you know, some may start from Baruch She'amar followed by Hodu, some may say Hodu and then Baruch She'amar, that ultimately we all sing out together, Yehi Chavod Hashem Le'olam. When it comes to announcing the glory of HaKadosh Baruch, everybody's back together. Things might be in a different order until that point, but when we get to Yehi Chavod, everybody's back together. Because again, that's the goal. Hashem made the world in such a way that we each have our own unique way of getting there. But as long as we're traveling to the same destination, it doesn't matter which road we take to get there. Again, that road has to be viewed through the prism of the Torah, but there certainly are different roads to reach the same destination. And it's true in Halacha as well. The Shulchan Aruch in Arachayim, in Siman Tzadi, in Siv Dalet, the Shulchan Aruch says that it's preferable when you're building a shul to build a shul which has 12 windows in it. And the Shulchan Aruch doesn't explain why you should have the 12 windows. The Sfatemis explains that the reason for the 12 windows is connected to the 12 windows in the Shemayim, that there are 12 windows through which Tefillah goes up in Shemayim. Why 12? Because each Shevet has their own Koach and Tefillah. Everybody has a different approach to Tefillah. And you see it, you go to different Minyanim, you go to different communities, and there are different approaches to how we're going... 12 here, excellent. So there are different approaches to how they daven, but again, as long as it's going in the same direction, there are specifics to the way Hashem wanted the world. He didn't want us to be fitting into one cookie-cutter mold. All Jews are not supposed to be identical. But again, in terms of the ultimate destination, we are supposed to be headed toward the same place. But how do we get there? That certainly can be deferent. And that's what the lesson of the Degolim is, I think. Again, we're not supposed to be in that cookie-cutter mold. Yes, we need to end up in the same spot, and yes, the mode which we choose to reach there has to be one of Torah and Mitzvos. It has to be viewed through the prism of that Mishkan, which is going to be in the middle, but it need not be identical. There's one medrash which I left out, which in light of everything we're saying is very difficult, which is why I left it out. But we'll try to understand it now anyway. The medrash says, "B'shah she'amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, Aseh Osham l'Degolim k'mosh nesavu." At the time when Hashem told Moshe, make for Bnei Yisrael these Degolim, these encampments, these banners, which they desired, Hislam Moshe Meitzer, Moshe became upset, nervous. Amar Achshav Asida Machloka Esli Nosim Ben Hashvatim. Now there's going to be fights amongst the Shvatim. If I Neomer L'Shivto Shal Yehuda, Sheyeshu B'Mizrach. If I tell the people of Yehuda to go in the east, Hu Amar Yevshila B'Darim. No, I only want to go in the south. V'chein Ruvein, V'chein Ephraim, V'chein Kol Sheva V'Sheva. Nobody's going to want to listen. Everybody's going to want to go to a different spot. Seems very difficult. First of all, why did Moshe suspect that this would be the case? Why was Moshe afraid that this was going to happen? Why did he suspect that anything was going wrong? And secondly, why would the Shvatim care? So they put on the east side, they put on the south side. What does it matter? They know that these encampments, again, if this idea is true, that the encampments are zeroing in on the unique attributes that each Shevet has, so why do they care where they're placed? Hashem, through Moshe, is guiding them to saying, this is where you should be, this is where you're going to be able to put your talents together, these are the Shvatim you're going to be able to work with to approach Hashem, so why would they want to be somewhere else? No, but... we'll leave the Kliyakar out for now. But even there, I think the representing materialism, I think, is supposed to be a challenge as well. The ability to overcome that and be able to use that, as the way the Mesillas Yesharim writes, that Oni is a Nisayon on the one side, and the Osher is also a Nisayon. Each one presents its own Nisayon. But I think in light of what we're saying, perhaps the answer is that Moshe saw the sincere yearning of Kal Yisrael to reach Hashem. They were the ones who wanted this. They saw that the Malachim knew their purpose, and this was something that they wanted. They wanted to mimic. They wanted to have this gift as well. They wanted to have this closeness to Hashem. But what Moshe was afraid of was in that sincere yearning, he was afraid that they would try to move beyond their level, beyond what they were capable of. They were going to try to use means which weren't much in for them, which didn't fit them, which weren't good for them, to try and move above and beyond what they were capable of accomplishing. Every person has a mission, every person has a purpose, and has something which they and they alone are supposed to try and accomplish. But what somebody else's purpose is not my purpose, and I'm not supposed to try and reach the level of that person if that's not where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to use the kochos that I have and perfect them and to work on them to use them as much as possible. And what he was afraid of was a similar argument that Korach used. That Korach's argument was, what's so special about Moshe and Aaron? Everybody, kol ha'adam kulam kadoshim. Everybody is kadosh. Everybody is holy. Everybody can reach Hashem. And Moshe realized that, again, in this sincere yearning to be close to Hashem, he was afraid that every Sheva was not only going to want what they have, they know that they have their kochos ready, but they were going to try to use the other kochos as well. But what Moshe was concerned with, what Hashem told him in the end not to be concerned with, no, every Sheva needs to realize that they have certain kochos, and that's why, even though the potential for machlokas existed, Hashem says no, it's important enough that every Sheva be given the opportunity, be given their degel, their chance to see what their attributes are and to use those, that it's something that we have to be careful of. Everything has its potential to be a pitfall as well. So here, seeing what the other Shvatim had was also a potential pitfall for the other Shvatim. They might want to use somebody else's nusach to try and reach Hashem in tefillah. Everybody has their own path. Everybody has their own way. And everybody needs to try and find that which speaks to them. We don't have the Shvatim in the clear way that they had it then also. So we don't have the guidance in terms of trying to figure out exactly what our kofos are. But again, that's just what this, I think, what this message of the Degalim, what the Degalim is. The reason Chumash Bamidbar begins with a census which ultimately leads into the Degalim is because Chumash HaPekudim, in fact, is a very essential lesson, and perhaps the essential lesson of the entire Sefer. When we're going to be going through a Sefer which deals a lot with the Machane Yisrael and the details of the Machane and the problems that arise in the Machane, the message that the Sefer begins with is that every person is unique. Every person has their kofos. Every person has their own attributes, their own talents. Every person needs to find ways to challenge, to channel that towards Hashem. This is an expression of Hashem's love for us. This was something that the Goyim were jealous of, that we have this knowledge, that we have this gift that Hashem allows for us to try and be in touch with who we really are, and in that sense be doma to the Malachim. The Malachim were the original inspiration for this. The same way the Malach can only accomplish their purpose, there is no other mission that a Malach is even capable of. That's something that we strive for as well. To use the different cultures that we have, to be part of the community, and to take the qualities of the community that we have, but at the same time to find our own unique contributions that we could make. But at the same time to be careful of venturing too far, of being careful of being intrigued by somebody else's talents, by trying to go beyond our means, but to try and focus on what our own strengths are and to use those, ultimately that the Mishkan and the Torah should be at the center, and to use this as a tool in our Avodas Hashem.